Imagine you've just spent like a really grueling month writing 1,000 automated UI tests for your company's massive web application.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is quite the undertaking.
Right. And you go to sleep feeling like an absolute hero. But then the next morning, a front-end developer updates the underlying design framework.
Let me guess, a single login button changes its CSS class.
Boom. Exactly that. A single class changes, and boom, every single one of your 1,000 tests just fails instantly.
Yeah, that is a nightmare. A total sea of red on your dashboard.
Your heart just absolutely sinks. So today we are taking a massive deep dive into the Playwright Roadmap 2026, which was published by Playwright Masters.
And it is a really phenomenal blueprint. I mean, we're looking at a completely comprehensive journey here.
Yeah, from absolute beginner all the way to a job-ready Playwright automation engineer. And our mission for this deep dive is to show you how to stop that fragile nightmare scenario we just talked about from, well, ever happening again.
Exactly. Because it doesn't have to be that way.
Right. And, whether you're a manual tester trying to level up, or maybe a seasoned Selenium veteran looking to make the switch, or honestly, just someone insanely curious about how these massive web apps we use every day are actually validated before they hit production. This roadmap is essentially a masterclass.
It really is. It teaches you how to think like an engineer, rather than just a script writer.
Okay, let's unpack this because the guide outlines 41 distinct stages, which sounds like an intimidating mountain to climb.
It sounds like a lot, yeah.
But the secret they highlight right out of the gate, it isn't about like rote memorization of code syntax. It's a complete mindset shift.
Right, because if you approach this like a vocabulary test, where you're just memorizing commands to click a button or, fill out a text field.
You just hit a brick wall.
Exactly. You hit a wall the moment the application behaves unexpectedly, which is exactly why the roadmap refuses to let you install any shiny new testing tools right at the start.
They practically build the barricade. I mean, they explicitly demand that you learn software testing fundamentals, JavaScript or TypeScript basics, and the document object model long before you even like type npm install Playwright.
Because you cannot automate a process that you don't fundamentally grasp. I mean, if you don't know what a good, valuable test actually looks like.
Automating just means you're doing the wrong thing much, much faster.
Exactly, much faster and at a larger scale.
I love the metaphor the roadmap uses for this. They say learning Playwright without understanding core testing concepts, it's like having a robot that can click buttons at superhuman speed.
Right.
But the robot has absolutely no idea which buttons to press or like why it's pressing them. The robot itself is flawless, but the strategy is garbage.
That's a perfect analogy.
But I have to ask, especially for someone staring down this massive path, is it really necessary to master all of JavaScript before starting? Or just like learn enough to be dangerous?
Well, you only need enough to be dangerous at first, but it has to be the right kind of dangerous.
What do you mean by the right kind?
I mean, you don't need to write a custom compiler or master advanced data structures on day one. You do, however, absolutely need to understand asynchronous programming, the concepts of async and await.
Oh, yeah, because the browser doesn't execute at the speed of your code.
Precisely.
I remember back in my early automation days, I would write a script that told the browser to click login and then immediately click view profile, and the test would just fail every single time.
Let me guess, the profile page hadn't actually loaded yet.
Exactly. My code was sprinting a marathon while the browser was still like tying its shoes.
That is a great way to visualize it because a web browser is dealing with physical realities, right? Network latency, database queries, rendering
Yeah,
graphics.
real world stuff that takes time.
Right. And if your script doesn't explicitly know how to pause and wait for the browser's promises to resolve, they just fall out of sync instantly. Async and await are basically the structural mechanisms that tell your lightning-fast code to politely wait for the browser to catch up.
That makes a lot of sense. And then there's the DOM, the document object model. The roadmap places a massive emphasis on this before you even touch Playwright.
What's fascinating here is that the DOM is basically the structural blueprint of the web page. It's the raw HTML tags, the IDs, the CSS classes that dictate how everything is built.
Right.
And if you don't understand that blueprint, you're just wandering around a dark house hoping to bump into the right door. You end up just randomly guessing how to find elements on the page.
Oh, like right-clicking an element in the browser, hitting copy XPath, and getting this hideous, like 100-character long string of slashes and nested div tags and numbers?
Yeah, that you just blindly paste into your script.
Guilty as charged.
We've all been there. But the moment a developer adds a single new image or, you know, shifts a layout container by a few pixels, that path is completely destroyed and your test shatters.
Because it's too rigid.
Exactly. Understanding the DOM allows you to find stable, reliable hooks in the application.
Okay, so once we have that blueprint, once we know testing theory, we understand async JavaScript, and we can actually read the DOM, we finally get to the core of Playwright.
Right, stages 4 through 10.
Yeah. So how does Playwright physically interact with a web page differently than the older automation tools we're so used to?
Well, it shifts the entire philosophy. Instead of targeting the underlying code structure, it heavily encourages targeting the actual user experience.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because the roadmap introduces the locator rule. And I absolutely love this rule.
It's a game changer.
It really is. It says, you know, don't choose the shortest locator. Choose the one that is stable, readable, and user-facing. And the prime example they give is a command called get by role.
Right, because think about how a human user interacts with a page. A human doesn't scan the screen looking for a div nested inside a span with the class of BTM primary 2024, right?
No, obviously not.
A human looks for a button that visually says submit. By using get by role, you are telling Playwright to act like that human.
It's basically an explicit contract with the UI. If the developer completely rips out the underlying CSS framework and replaces it, but the button still visually says submit and functions as a button, your test still passes.
Exactly that. It is a massive stress reliever for maintenance.
And speaking of stress relief,
yeah.
The architecture model they break down for Playwright is just brilliant. It goes, browser, then browser context, then page.
Yes, the three tiers.
Right. And I like to picture the browser as a massive office building. In the old days of automation, for every single test, you had to construct a brand new building, walk inside, run your test, and then completely demolish the building. It took forever.
It was incredibly resource heavy. I mean, booting up a full Chrome instance from scratch for every test takes significant memory and CPU power.
But Playwright introduces the browser context.
Yeah,
so if the browser is the building, the context is like a completely separate soundproof room inside that building. It's an isolated session.
Right.
And the page is just a single screen or monitor sitting inside that room.
And opening a new room inside an existing building is almost instantaneous compared to building a new one.
Exactly.
And because these rooms are soundproof, meaning the contexts are perfectly isolated, the cookies, the local storage, and the cache from test A absolutely cannot bleed over and corrupt test B.
That makes total sense. It's so much faster. But let me push back on something that always drove me crazy with older automation tools.
Sure. What is it?
Even with this great architecture, web pages still get stuck sometimes. Elements just take forever to load. So when a test gets stuck, isn't it just easier to add a hard pause, like a wait for timeout command, to give the page time to load?
Oh, no. No.
I mean, I used to just tell the code to sleep for 2 seconds, give the page time to breathe, then move on. It worked perfectly.
Well, it works perfectly until it becomes a catastrophic bottleneck. The roadmap explicitly calls out arbitrary timeouts as a terrible mindset.
But why? I mean, if it fixes the flaky test, isn't it doing its job?
Let's run the math on that. Say you tell your script to wait 2 seconds. If the network is really struggling and it takes 3 seconds to load, your test still fails, right?
Oh, yeah, true.
So you didn't actually solve the flakiness. Conversely, if the network is lightning fast and the button is ready in half a second, your script still sits there doing absolutely nothing for a second and a half.
Oh, I see where you're going with this. If I have 1,000 tests.
A second and a half of wasted computation time multiplied by thousands of tests means your test suite now takes an extra hour to run?
Well, yeah.
Developers are sitting around waiting for results, deployment gets delayed, and the automation suite becomes a huge burden instead of a benefit.
So how do we guarantee the element is ready without wasting all that time?
The better mindset, which Playwright enforces, is auto-waiting. Playwright enforces waiting for state, not for time.
Waiting for state. What does that look like?
So you tell Playwright you want to click a button. Before Playwright even attempts the click, it automatically performs a rigorous checklist of actionability checks. Is the button attached to the DOM? Is it visible? Is it stable, meaning it has stopped animating? Is it actually enabled?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it constantly pulls the element for these specific states, and the exact microsecond the button is ready, it clicks it.
So goodbye, wait 2 seconds, and hope for the best.
Exactly.
Okay, so clicking a single button reliably is a huge win. We've officially escaped the dark ages of guessing and arbitrary waiting. But, you know, clicking a calculator button in a controlled demo is easy. Real web applications are messy, and the roadmap points out that real users have complex journeys.
They absolutely do. Real automation gets incredibly complicated because users don't just click one thing. They navigate through third-party iframes, they upload files that open new tabs, they interact with dynamic dropdowns.
Right. The roadmap calls this the calculator test trap.
Mm-hmm.
Writing simple, perfect tests for isolated features doesn't prepare you for a multi-step e-commerce checkout flow.
No, it doesn't at all.
And the biggest hurdle they mention when advancing to these complex elements is authentication.
Oh, yeah. Authentication is a classic bottleneck where beginner test suites just grind to a halt. Think about it. If you have a suite of 50 tests, and every single test requires the user to be logged in to view an account dashboard, how do you handle that?
Well, the rookie mistake is writing the login steps into every single test. You know, type username, type password, click login, wait for the dashboard to load 50 separate times.
Which is just brutal on your execution time. And if the login server goes down for a split second, you suddenly have 50 failed tests instead of one.
Right. So the roadmap teaches you to handle this by reusing the logged in state, which, wait, this ties right back into those soundproof rooms of browser context.
Yes. You log in exactly once. You take the session state, the cookies, the secure tokens, and you literally save it to a file.
Okay.
Then for the other 49 tests, you inject that saved state directly into their browser contexts. They spawn into existence already logged in, completely bypassing the login screen.
That is so clean. So to organize all of this complexity, the roadmap introduces data-driven testing and POM, the page object modder.
Right, moving into framework design.
Yeah, and data-driven testing makes total sense to me. You separate the test logic from the test data. Instead of writing 10 identical scripts to see if 10 different user roles can log in, you write one core test and feed it a spreadsheet of those 10 users.
Exactly. Keep it clean.
But POM, the page object model, this is a massive industry buzzword. From what I understand, it means taking a web page and representing it as a reusable class object in your code so you centralize all your locators in one place.
That is the textbook definition, yeah. The idea is, if the login button locator changes, you only update it once in the page object class, and every single test using that class automatically gets the fix.
But, you know, if we are building this massive framework, defining every single page as a class, creating all these reusable components, how do we know we aren't just making it overly complicated, like over-engineering the whole thing?
That is such a crucial point. It's actually mistake number 4 in their guide. Building POM too early.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Designing a framework just because some blog told you everyone uses POM is a dangerous trap.
Wait, so we shouldn't use it?
Well, you should use it, but only when it solves a real problem. A bad page object model results in hundreds of unnecessary methods and files for pages you aren't even testing yet. It makes the code way harder to read and harder to maintain. The true goal of any framework should be to reduce duplication.
Ah, I get it. So the strategy is, like, write the tests first, feel the pain of maintaining duplicated code, and only then build the page object model to alleviate that specific pain.
Let the problem dictate the architecture.
Let the problem dictate the architecture. I really like that. Okay, so let's say we've done it. We have a beautiful, highly maintainable UI test suite. We avoided the over-engineering trap. Our locators are stable. But UI testing, even when it's highly optimized, is still relatively slow.
It's the nature of the UI, yeah.
And if these tests only pass on my specific laptop and fail on a colleague's machine, mm-hmm. we have a whole new set of problems. This brings us to a massive shift in the roadmap, moving beyond the browser entirely.
And this is really the dividing line between someone who just writes UI scripts and a true automation engineer. An engineer has to think about the entire infrastructure.
They introduce hybrid API testing here, and this concept absolutely blew my mind.
It's so powerful.
The idea is, let's say you need to test a customer profile page. Instead of using the UI to click through 10 screens to create a new customer account, which might take 2 whole minutes, you write a script that makes a back-end API call to inject that customer into the database instantly.
Oh, right.
And then you use the UI just to load the profile page and verify it visually looks right.
It is the ultimate combination of speed and confidence. The API does the heavy lifting in milliseconds, and the UI test verifies the real-world visual state.
And they push this further with network interception. You don't just have to test the happy path, right? You can literally simulate a 500 internal server error.
Yes, without taking down the real server.
Exactly. You don't have to crash the company's actual backend server to see what happens. Playwright just intercepts the network call and lies to the browser, saying, "Hey, the server just crashed."
Which allows you to see exactly how your front-end application handles failure. Does it show a graceful error message, or does it completely freeze and turn white?
Right.
Testing those edge cases in a real environment is notoriously difficult without network interception.
But you can't run these massive hybrid suites on your laptop forever. The roadmap dives really heavy into DevOps tools around here. It covers Git for version control, Docker Basics, and CI/CD pipelines.
Absolute necessities.
And let's be honest, those terms get thrown around constantly, but they solve very specific nightmares. Docker, for example, solves the classic, "Well, it works on my machine" problem.
Yes. If your test passes on a Mac but fails on a Linux server because of a missing font or a different node version, Docker fixes that.
How does it do that?
It essentially packages your tests, the browser, and all the dependencies into a standardized container. It guarantees the environment is identical everywhere it runs.
That is so useful. Mm-hmm. And the CI/CD pipeline, things like GitHub Actions or Jenkins, I always like to think of them as a ruthless nightclub bouncer.
A bouncer, I like that.
Yeah, when a developer tries to merge new code into the main application, the pipeline acts as the bouncer. It automatically runs all your tests. If the test passes, the bouncer lifts the velvet rope and the code goes to production. If a test fails, the bouncer violently rejects the code.
Which means your automated tests are literally the last line of defense for the company's product. That is a massive, massive responsibility.
Which makes parallel testing so terrifying. You know, running 50 tests at the exact same time to speed up that pipeline. The roadmap warns about a massive hidden danger here: test isolation.
This raises an important question about how you actually write your tests. See, when you run 100 tests sequentially, one after the other, they sometimes accidentally rely on each other.
Like test A creates a user, and test B just assumes that user's already sitting there in the database.
Exactly. But when you move to parallel testing, running them simultaneously, that hidden dependency becomes a disaster.
Because they're happening at the same time.
Right. If test B happens to run a millisecond before test A finishes creating the user, test B fails. If test A fails for a completely unrelated reason, test B fails. The whole suite collapses like a house of cards.
So what's the rule?
Complete isolation is non-negotiable. Every single test must set up its own data, do its job, and clean up its own mess, independent of every other test.
Got it. And to prove you can actually juggle API calls, Docker containers, and perfectly isolated parallel tests, the roadmap gives some phenomenal advice. They say one real project is more valuable than 10 copy-paste projects.
It's so true.
Don't just build demo tests that check if a toggle switch works. Build a full e-commerce checkout flow. Build a banking transaction flow.
Because a real project forces you to deal with unpredictable application state, corrupt data, and timing issues. It forces you to implement all the architectural concepts we just discussed.
Okay, so we've built the ultimate automation architecture. We've conquered the browser, the API, the CI/CD pipeline, which brings us to the final frontier of the roadmap, the much-hyped, unavoidable topic, AI.
Yes.
AI. And surprisingly, they put AI at the very, very end of this journey.
And that is arguably the most important pedagogical decision in this entire learning path.
Really? Because the concepts they cover here sound like straight science fiction. AI-assisted testing, the Playwright MCP, Model Context Protocol. From what I gather, MCP allows an AI assistant to communicate directly with your local development environment. Like, it can read your files, understand your specific framework, and write code tailored to your exact setup.
Right. It bridges the gap between a generic chatbot that just gives you code snippets and a specialized engineering assistant integrated into your workspace.
They also detail official test agents, like the planner, the generator, and the healer. And these agents can literally explore an application, write tests, and dynamically fix broken ones using something called structured accessibility snapshots. I really need you to explain this because I always just assumed AI testing tools looked at a screenshot of the app.
Oh, this is a crucial distinction. If an AI just looks at a screenshot of pixels, it is incredibly fragile.
Why is that?
Because pixels render differently on different monitors, right?
Yes.
Responsive designs shift elements around constantly, but a structured accessibility snapshot feeds the AI the actual structural intent of the page, the accessibility tree.
So it knows what the elements mean, not just what they look like on a screen.
Yes. It knows where the logical buttons are, what the text fields expect, how a screen reader interprets the hierarchy. It allows the AI to navigate the application with absolute precision, and it makes it totally immune to superficial visual changes.
Wow. So what does this all mean for the learner? The roadmap outlines a final learning loop. Learn, write, break, debug, improve, explain. But I have to challenge this. I really do.
Okay, go for it.
If an AI healer agent can dynamically fix my broken tests and an MCP can read accessibility snapshots perfectly, why on earth do I need to spend a month learning the DOM and writing locators? Can't I just farm the whole thing out to the AI?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we hit mistake number 8 in their guide. Using AI without checking the output. You cannot properly judge an AI-generated test if you do not fundamentally understand what a good test looks like.
I see. So if the AI writes a terrible, overly complex locator that only works by pure luck, I wouldn't even know it's bad.
You wouldn't have a clue, yeah. Not until it breaks in the CI/CD pipeline and blocks a major deployment for the whole team.
That would be bad.
AI is a multiplier, you know. It will make a skilled automation engineer much, much faster. But it will make a bad tester generate terrible, unmaintainable code at the speed of light. It cannot act as a substitute for foundational understanding.
That makes so much sense. And it ties perfectly into the debugging mindset they emphasize right at the finish line. You know, using tools like the Trace Viewer and network logs instead of just blindly changing code and hoping it passes.
Exactly. A real engineer asks why a test failed. Was it a slow database? What's the test data corrupt? Or is there an actual bug in the application that we just caught?
Right.
A junior tester just tries to make a red failing test turn green. A senior engineer finds the root cause of the red.
A senior engineer finds the root cause of the red. That is the perfect summary. So to bring this massive roadmap together for you listening, depending on your background, this journey takes time.
Yes, it certainly does.
If you are a seasoned Selenium veteran, you might power through this in 6 weeks. If you are a complete beginner, you are looking at 3 to 5 months of dedicated work.
It is a serious investment. You are learning infrastructure here, not just a tool.
But the value here isn't in checking off 41 boxes so you can slap a playwright badge on your resume. The true value is gaining the ability to confidently look at any complex web application and say, I know what to test, I know how to automate it, and I know exactly how to run it reliably in a CI/CD pipeline.
Right. It is the definitive shift from being just a script writer to being a real automation architect.
It leaves us with a really fascinating thought, though, about where we go from here. Think about what we just discussed. If AI is already using model context protocols to read structural accessibility trees, and if we're heavily blending instantaneous API tests with UI tests, the very definition of a tester is fundamentally shifting beneath our feet.
The skills required today are vastly different than they were even 3 years ago. The tools are abstracting away all that manual labor.
Yeah, so in the future, you might not be writing scripts to test the software at all. You might be engineering the AI that tests the software. So think about that failing 1,000 test scenario we started with. The entire landscape of automation is being redrawn. How will you evolve your mindset today to prepare for the automation landscape of tomorrow?